You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. We now present the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bunyan.
Welcome to Catechism Hour with me, Brother Justin Bunyan of the Heralds of the Gospel, and today we are going to continue our little pilgrimage, going through different apparitions of Our Lady and their significance, cultural significance, in the place where they are realized. What's fascinating many a time is that many Catholics either have no idea about the breadth and the depth of the multitude of opportunities Our Lady came to speak to her children, or they have a very localized vision in which it's only an image, maybe a miraculous image, maybe not, in their little community, in their little paese, in the little town or little church, in which they respect and honor. And these apparitions that we're looking at, we've been looking at the last couple of weeks, are national. They're big. They're important, and they all had an interesting mission. I'm going to look at one coming up in the next week, which is going to encompass much more than just two half episodes of two apparitions, which is going to be Our Lady of Częstochowa. And the reason why is because if it's cultural significance, it's historic significance. The whole place of Jasna Góra within the history of Poland, the Polish Lithuanian Commonwealth, and its place as a bulwark against heresy, against the what was known as the Swedish deluge when it came through Poland and Pomerania and reduced Poland to rags. And the story of a remarkable desecration of that image. But today we're going to look at two images, and also in their stories, we're going to look at Our Lady of the Cape, which is situated in the Cap de Madeleine in outside of Trois-Rivières, Quebec. It's on the St. Lawrence Seaway. And after that, we're going to look at Our Lady of Aparecida, which is the national patroness of Brazil. So we're going to look at the national patroness of Canada and the natural patroness of Brazil. So let's start with Our Lady of Cape, since we are recording this in Canada and it's closer to our hearts. So Our Lady of the Cape, also known as Our Lady of the Cap de Madeleine, or Our Lady of the Rosary. And what's very interesting is that the amount of images of Our Lady of the Rosary in the world are absolutely astronomical. So that tells us something, which is that Our Lady really is interested in us praying the Rosary. And in truth, we look at the works of St. Dominic, we look at the works of St. Louis de Montfort, and many other saints, the role of the Rosary is a royal route to heaven. It's the quickie. It's the quickie route to get to heaven. It's a way of getting to heaven in a sense that we're going to get there. We're going to be we end up currying favor very easily with our Lord Jesus Christ through the devotion to Our Lady. So let's go into, again, we're going to use the same process. We're going to go over some of the facts of the story and then kind of roll back and wrap it all up with a little bit more just systematic dates so we can kind of situate ourselves in the end. So let's start with the fact is that Catholic French settlers came into Quebec in large numbers. In the 17th century, a little bit of the 16th and 17th was the main thrust of when they arrived. The French coming over, mostly from where they came, which was in Normandy, La Maine, Anjou, and then the northern coast, Brittany, what have you, they had very strong devotions to Our Lady. So when they came over, they believed that they would enjoy Our Lady's protection. That's why at one of the shrines outside of Quebec City is Our Lady of Racamadour, which is another big devotion that Jacques Cartier had. And this devotion was important as they crossed the stormy and tumultuous Atlantic Sea. This was not a pleasure vessel going across, some yacht, you know, carbon neutral or not, but crossing the Atlantic, these were this side of a chestnut crossing over. It was a terrible short trip. So they would pray and make novenas, make promises on their trip over that Our Lady would defend them and protect them. Trois-Rivières was a small trading port, as in most of those cities in Quebec, that was consecrated to the Immaculate Conception by the Jesuits in 1634. Trade increased, which is in line of its location. It was the port for three major rivers that flowed through this area. So it was from there that you would go north. So it had a good access to all the produce of the rivers, but also of the north country, pelts and the like. So as the trade increased, the internal and the original settlements divided and they came into smaller communities. So one of those smaller communities right outside of Trois-Rivières is the Cap de Madeleine, so the Cape of Madeleine, so Madeleine's Cape. And the first parish priest there was a Father Jacques Bourdeaux, who was murdered in a raid by the native Iroquois in 1652. So the Iroquois, well, on one of their raids, they killed the Father Jacques. By this time, the governor who is at Trois-Rivières is Pierre Boucher. He built a church and set up a small shrine to Our Lady, which in 1694 became the center of a local branch of the Confraternity of the Holy Rosary. And this was very common in Quebec, very common. The population increased. The larger church replaced the older one in 1720, but the original wooden chapel was left to commemorate a small replica set up, and it was dedicated to Our Lady of Peace. In 1855, a benefactor provided a huge statue of Our Lady in honor of the recent promulgation of the doctrine of the Immaculate Conception. Don't forget, this area had been dedicated to the Immaculate Conception. The statue is now the center of the Cap de Madeleine, the Church of Our Lady of the Cape, Queen of the Most Holy Rosary, Canada's national shrine. It is a figure of Our Lady standing barefoot, trampling the head of the serpent in fulfillment of the Old Testament prophecy. You shall bruise the head of the serpent, and of the promise that God would finally beat down Satan with our feet. But what happened? What happened was this, and this is the interesting part of the story. One of the beautiful stories, one of the beautiful miracles that happened was that, as what happens with all humans, what happens within the spiritual life of everyone. We have ups and downs. And this community had its share of ups and downs. A lot of downs, actually. Incredible. But in the mid-19th century, what affected the colony was a great apathy, a great lack of devotion, a great laicism, and slackness in this region. So a Father de Celts was sent to the church on Ascension Day 1867, so around the time of the foundation of Canada. And what did his parish consist of? So when we complain about today having such terrible things happen and all kinds of, no one goes to church and what have you, this priest is sent to this church, and who is his congregation? His congregation consisted of one solitary pig in the ladies' chapel, in the chapel of Our Lady. And what was the pig doing? It was chewing on a rosary. The priest was shocked. The priest was infuriated. What was a pig doing in the church? Had people abandoned the parish that badly? And chewing on a rosary, what a desecration. But he uses this as an argument point in his preaching going forward. And he begins the subject of the pig and the rosary. And he shames the parishioners. And very quickly, his congregation begins to increase because he has true devotion to Our Lady. And he begins to preach the rosary. After a while, an even larger church was now required, for which stone had to be brought in the winter from a quarry on the far side, on the other side, on the south side of the St. Lawrence River. Normally, this would have been easily accomplished by using sleds over ice, but in the winter of 1879, it was incredibly mild for winter, and the river did not freeze. I mean, imagine global warming, I guess. And the building was left at a standstill. It didn't grow. It wasn't able to be built. The stone was the quarries on the other side. They can't bring the stone over. It's too heavy. Usually the river froze over hard. But Father de Celts prayed to Our Lady of the Rosary, for a bridge of ice. Now, this is fascinating. If any of you know the St. Lawrence, St. Lawrence is a very quick flowing river. The fact that it freezes tells you how cold it gets in the winter. But it's a fast moving river. Another point also is that at the St. Lawrence at this point, there is a large quantity of salt water in the St. Lawrence. It's already mixing. Granted, the water is being pushed out that's fresh, but there is a lot of salt water that comes back in. So that, again, that makes your freezing more complicated because of the salt water, saline solution in there. And this problem is made even worse because winter was basically over. It's now mid-March. And, I mean, Ontario, it's already the beginning of spring, but in Quebec, it's still very much winter. But this winter has been so warm that nothing's frozen. And in this prayer, a tremendous storm blows a pack of ice from the banks into the middle of the river. And there it forms a bridge. In thanksgiving, Father de Celts preserves the old chapel by the side of the new and designates the altar Our Lady of the Rosary. The restored Lady Chapel, this is the same chapel that the pig was in. June 22nd, 1888, that evening, a lame man called Pierre Lacroix was brought into the chapel by Father de Celts and Father Frederic. The three men experienced probably one of the most amazing apparitions that happened on Canadian soil. And the three men What's interesting is that all three of them swore oaths about what had happened and were investigated individually, and it was just what it was. And it all centers on this image of Our Lady. As Father De Celtz reports, she raised her eyes. She looked in front of her as she was looking up downwards at a distance. Her eyes and her face were severe, but rather sad. The three men swore this oath that had truly taken place. The statement is stored on parchment in the library of the sanctuary to this very day. And Father Pierre Lacroix's, the layman named Pierre Lacroix, his testimony is very succinct. It reads as following. I went into the shrine at about 7 o'clock in the evening, accompanied by the Vicar General, Luc Desils, and Reverend Father Frederic. I was walking between the two of them, helped by them. After praying a while, I looked up at the statue of the Blessed Virgin, which was facing directly towards me. As I did, I saw most distinctly the statue with its eyes wide open in the most natural manner. It was as if distinctly the statue with its eyes wide open in the most natural manner, it was as if that was looking over our heads and towards Trois Rivières. I examined this closely without saying anything. Then the Vicar General, Desils, leaving his place at my right, went across to Father Frederic. I heard him say, "Do you see it?" "Yes," said Father Frederic, "the statues has its eyes open, hasn't it? But can this truly be?" Then I told them that I had seen the same thing. I made this solemn declaration, believing in conscience to be true and knowing that it has the same force and effect as if made upon oath. This is the game breaker for the devotion in the Cata Madeleine. After the miracle of the ice bridge and the miracle of the statue, pilgrims start to converge on the Cata Madeleine from all over Canada. Their numbers increase year by year. Father Frederic immediately began a mission to preach the name of the Blessed Virgin Mary throughout the nation. And in 1902, he's encouraged by the diocesan bishop to install the Oblate Missionaries of Mary Immaculate to supervise his pilgrimages and to be stewards of the shrine. The Shrine of Our Lady of the Cape at the Cata Madeleine is one of the most beautiful of all the world's churches dedicated to the Blessed Virgin. It's quaint, it's small. The new basilica, it's not very nice, but it's huge, but it's one of those kind of more modern things. But the little chapel is incredibly blessed. Now, in that, on the property, they have beautiful gardens and Way of the Cross. They have a rosary. They also have a bridge that is built. And that bridge is to remind the person of the ice bridge that brought the rock over to build the church. The amount of pilgrims that have gone through that place looking for Our Lady's blessing and help are out of this world. Father Frederic was beatified in 1888. Many cures and accounts of spiritual blessings have been attested to the name of Our Lady who had opened her eyes. The element of Father Frederic. Father Frederic is a fascinating individual. He had been in a commissaire of the Holy Land. He built in Quebec a Way of the Cross, which is exactly the same size as the way the cross is in Jerusalem. He was a preacher of extremely high level, and he is an individual of amazing virtue. If you see his picture, it's a face of someone who you may say, he saw Our Lady. He saw Our Lady not just acting in a way that was in face of a statue, which he did, and he was faithful to that. But he saw Our Lady's face in the suffering of people who came looking for help. So the statue of Our Lady of the Rosary was crowned on the authority of Pius X in St. Pius X in 1904, and again under the authority of Pope Pius XII. It is the only crowned image of Our Lady in Canada. St. John Paul II made it in his personal pilgrimage there, September 8, 1984. Now, I would recommend anyone who would like to see something like this to go there, make the pilgrimage, to spend time with Our Lady. Like any site of a miracle, you need time. Lourdes is very much like that too. You need time. You need time to establish that relationship, to attune yourself to the atmosphere that Our Lady has given that area. It's not meant to be a place that you, like a McDonald's, you run in, you grab it and you leave. You need to spend a little bit of time. You need this quiet time, you know, time to sit, pray, put your priorities in order. Because if you do that, then in truth, you will be able to find a means to attune yourself to the heart of Mary. Because that's what it all is. Now, I'm going to go now over some of the more date-oriented elements for those of you who are so interested in those beautiful dates. So let's go. So devotion to Our Lady of the Cape is rooted in the devotions that came from France and the settlement beginning in 1694. With the institution of the Brotherhood of the Rosary under Father Paul Vachon. 1720, Father Paul Vachon builds a small fieldstone church to replace the wooden structure. Father Vachon dies in 1729 and is buried in the church. The church falls into decline, there's no resident priest, and it's not until 1845 does the bishop appoint a pastor for the area, the Tungay. In 1867, everything is revived under Father Luc de Sils after he finds the story of the pig and the rosary. He vows and consecrates himself to the Blessed Virgin and reintroduces the devotion to the... You see that it takes that. It takes that element of giving of oneself over to be able to have that missionary zeal to blow things up. So here's a little bit about the description of the image. In 1854, parishioner Zéphane Dorval was heading for the gold fields, and in hope of protection of Our Lady, donated a statue, which is Our Lady of, as shown to Catherine Laboure in Paris in 1830. The statue represents Our Lady standing in an attitude reminiscent of the miraculous medal. The eyes are modestly downcast and a pleasant facial expression. Her head is covered with a white veil, her garments gilded and ornamented. Her bare feet crush the serpent coiled at her star-studded globe. The statue originally placed in the alcove containing the altar of the confraternity of the Holy Rosary before being relocated above the high altar. Miracles of the ice bridge. Let's go over this point again. Again, this is really important, as you may understand. The two main miracles of Our Lady of the Cape are the ice bridge and the ice. So during the revival of Marian devotion, People attending the church increases. They need to build a new church. It's not adequate. 1878, it was decided that a larger church needed to be built. And of course, the quarry is on the south side of the St. Lawrence. It's approximately 1.25 miles across the St. Lawrence. The river doesn't freeze. The ice flow downstream from Lac Saint-Pierre. So there's a lake downstream that breaks up and it forms this ice bridge. Now, the key about the ice bridge is that it's March and these ice blocks that line up oh so nicely last only so long as they need to get the stones over. They don't stay much longer. So the statue, the shrine at this point, is renamed to Our Lady of the Rosary. Okay, so in 1888, the old church is formally dedicated to Our Lady, Queen of the Most Holy Rosary. The statue is put on top of the high altar that evening while praying in the small church. See, that's the connecting point. That's why these two miracles are so connected. It's when they do the they finish the church, they rededicate it, and the layman goes to Our Lady, that everything happens. So, what does that mean for us? Is that in many ways, spiritually, when we go to Our Lady, we are that lame man. We are lame, very lame, and we need that look. That look, sometimes sad, sometimes censoring, but more than anything else, a look in which Our Lady looks at us and says, "You, my son, need to be cured." And he left cured. So we need to do something. So let's ask in a special way that Our Lady may guide, protect us, and be with us. Our Lady of the Cape, pray for us. So we'll be back in a quick moment's time.
Thank you.
are listening to the Catechism Hour here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. To contact us, you can tweet us at Radio Maria Can or email catechismhour@radiomaria.ca.
Welcome back. So we're looking at now Our Lady of Aparecida, Our Lady who appears. Aparecida. And this is an image of Our Lady of the Immaculate Conception. I remember years ago, I went with a group to Brazil, and we went to one of the main museums in the city of São Paulo. And one of the points that a member of our group mentioned was, it seemed that they had two default images of Our Lady that existed in the colonial time. One was the Immaculate Conception, and the other one was Our Lady of Joy. They seem to be like the only two. And every apparition, every city patron was like Our Lady of whatever name of the town was, which was Our Lady of Immaculate Conception. So the fact that this image of Our Lady of Aparecida is Our Lady of Immaculate Conception should not be shocking. The other one is that even though the Immaculate Conception was declared a dogma of belief in the 1800s, it had been very, very strong, the devotion to the Immaculate Conception in Spain, in Portugal, in Luso-America, and Ibero-America for hundreds of years beforehand. Hundreds. So into the Middle Ages. So it's not surprising. The other point to remember with dogmas is that they're only usually declared in case of serious resistance. So it isn't something that we didn't believe it before, now we believe it. That's, many people have that mistaken thought. But it is that it was believed, but now it's being opposed. And since it's now being opposed, now it's being declared and clarified. Just make sure that's clear. So Aparecida. I'm going to go through some of the facts of it, and then from there we're going to look at some of the miracles of it also to help us with that. So the devotion to Our Lady of Aparecida, Our Lady of the Immaculate Conception, it has a special meaning. The site of the miracles of Aparecida, the massive shrine of Aparecida, is on the coast of a big river, Pariba. And this area, the Valley of Pariba, is instrumental in this whole thing. So what is this image? The image of Our Lady of Aparecida is made of terracotta. And the fishermen found her, and they realized that this event indicated a sign of intercession of Our Lady. The image is very dark. It's basically black. And they come up with different reasons on why it's black. One of the ideas maybe is because of the of how it was found. It was found in the river in two pieces. But the problem, the counter argument to that, and I saw that when I was at the shrine of Aparecida, they said it was made out of terracotta, and terracotta left in the river for a very long time would have just become mud. So the fact that it turned black because of the river doesn't really give you a full indication. So this miracle occurred in the second half of October in the year 1717. And it happened when the Count of Asumar and the governor of the infantry of São Paulo and Minas of Oro, which is now Minas Gerais, Dom Pedro de Almeida, was passing through the city and was located in this valley of Pariba during a trip to Vila Rica. The inhabitants of the town decided to celebrate a great feast in honor of Dom Pedro. And though it was not a good season for fishing, they cast their nets into the river in an attempt to get some fish for the event. The fishermen, Domingos Garcia, Jean Alves, Felipe Peroso, prayed, asking the intercession of Our Lady. After several attempts, they went downriver until they were arriving at the port. When they were about to abandon their attempt to catch any fish, Jean Alves threw his net one more time. He picked up out of his net a body of a statue of Our Lady Immaculate Conception without a head. And once again, casting a net, he caught the head, which fit perfectly on the head, on the body of the statue. After having recovered both parts, the image of Our Lady Aparecida became so heavy that they could not move it. The fishermen then caught so many fish that they were forced to return to port because the boats almost sunk. This is attributed as the first miracle of Aparecida. So if you pray, great things can happen. You may ask the question, they prayed, they followed the inspiration of grace, they found Our Lady, and then everything else happened. During the next 15 years, the image remained in the house of Felipe Perosa. But the multitude of people that would come to pray and act the intercession of Our Lady increased so much that it became necessary to move it to a private chapel. In 1834, the construction of the old basilica began, which was inaugurated in December the 8th, 1888. In 1904, September the 8th, the image was crowned with jewels that were donated by Princess Isabella of Brazil and dressed in a robe embroidered with gold and more jewels, recognizing her royalty and powerful protection. After the crowning, the Holy Father granted the sanctuary of Aparecida its own office and mass proper to honor Our Lady of Aparecida, indulgences for the pilgrims visiting the sanctuary. On April the 29th, 1908, this church received the title of Minor Basilica, consecrated on September the 5th, 1909. In December 17th, 1928, the population had formed around this church in the heights of the Morro de Conqueras, became a city, and taking the name of Aparecida. Our Lady of Concepción Aparecida is proclaimed as Queen and Patron of Brazil on July the 16th, 1930, by decree of Pius the 11th. And in 1955, they started to build the new basilica. In 1980, John Paul II, Pope John Paul II, during his visit to Brazil, consecrated the Basilica of Our Lady of Aparecida and declaring it a major Marian sanctuary of the world. So these are kind of your points of it. I mean, this is really fascinating, Aparecida. Many of the popes have gone there to give it various indulgences and many... One of the gifts that the popes give to major shrines are what is known as the Golden Rose. So the first one to give a Golden Rose was Paul VI. He did so on the 12th of August, 1967. Benedict XVI gave the shrine a second one, and Pope Francis gave it his third rose. So what is the patroness? Like, what is she patroness of, besides of Brazil? She is the patroness of expectant mothers, newborn children, of rivers, the sea, and of beauty. So the elements, there's a few miracles that happened. And one of the things is because the story of an enslaved young man. There was this young man, and he had been a slave in the state of Paraná, and he had escaped. He had run away, and he ran as far as Aparecida. He almost got very close to Aparecida, and there he was caught. Now, remember, a slave was pretty much equal to that of chattel. So he was like a horse that had run away. He was to be locked up and beaten and what have you. And he asked, already chained, if he could go and pray to Our Lady. Now, the devotion to Aparecida has always been popular amongst the Afro-Brazilians. So he kneels in front of the image of Our Lady Aparecida. He makes a very beautiful prayer in which he asks in a special way to Our Lady, if he is to be enslaved on earth, that he not be enslaved to sin, that the chains of sin be released from him, and that she be truly his mother. The heavy chains that had bound his hands, his neck, and his feet at the end of his prayer fall from him. Now, keep in mind, these chains were secure. They were on him. They were securely fastened. It wasn't the case of shoddy lockmanship. This man had captured this runaway slave, and he had no intention of letting him go again. But he was a man of faith also. And like any human, he had defects. But he saw this. He saw the prayer. He heard the prayer. He saw the chains fall. And he embraced him as a brother. After this point, the two of them together, former slave owner and former slave, become apostles of Our Lady of Aparecida, going to and fro throughout Brazil, preaching and sharing this miracle of the chains to anyone who would hear. The other one is pretty shocking, again. So there was an atheist, a laicist, one who didn't believe in any religion, and he tried to bring his horse into the church. And this man made these bold proclamations that he was going to do X and Y and Z. And lo and behold, he brings his horse. His horse puts its hoof inside of the basilica. The stone, the granite, which the floor was made out of, in a sense, becomes liquid. And the hooves become stuck in the stone and will not move. And the horse kneels down. Though the man wants to commit this great act of sacrilege, the animal will not. And today, both the chains of the former slave and the stone with the marks of the hooves are kept in the museum of the basilica today. Aparecida is very near and dear to the Brazilian people. Very similar in a lot of ways to Guadalupe to Mexicans. When you travel to Brazil, you see him on the bumpers and all over the place. I'm not sure if it's as devout in the way that in the joke they have about Mexicans is that only 60% of Mexicans are Catholic, but they are 100% Guadalupan. Brazilians are very Aparecidian. Aparecida is a very close and dear element to their souls. And when you go to Aparecida, there's always a lot of people there. There's always a lot of people praying, a lot of people asking for miracles. And what you have today is you have the older basilica, which is a colonial-style church, nice size, but small-ish. And then within walking distance, you have the new basilica. Unfortunately, it's kind of like a warehouse. It's really, really huge. Huge, 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 but it lacks a little bit on the ornamentation. What is funny about it is that it was built around the same time as the new basilica of Our Saint Anne de Beaupré, and it's done also by the Redemptorists. Both are the Redemptorists of Brazil and the Redemptorists of Quebec. Now, what's interesting about it is that the Aparecida growth and devotion is something which is very important. But unfortunately, it hasn't been kept away from controversy. So in 1978, a person identified as evangelical snatched the statue from its niche in the basilica after the last mass of the day. He was chased by guards and by some of the churchgoers. When he was caught, the statue fell on the ground and broke into pieces. A group of artisans put it back together again. This marked a lot of the Brazilians. They sensed that Brazil had lost its faith, that someone was able to touch Our Lady of Aparecida. And this resounded strongly in many circles in Brazil. The feast day of Our Lady of Aparecida, which is the 12th of October, is the national feast day. It's a day off. And on that feast day, 1995, an incident known as Kicking of the Saint, and that's a Brazilianism, saint is an image, any image of a holy person, so Our Lady. And it took place when a televangelist, one of those Protestants, Sergio von Helder, of the Universal Church, Universal Church of God, insulted and kicked a replica of Our Lady of Aparecida and said that it can do nothing for you. The following day, everyone denounced it. It was tremendous. The event was perceived as tremendous element. And what happened was they had to get rid of this guy and had to get him out of the country because it was his life was at risk. They had insulted Our Lady. And imagine if someone had done that in Mexico to Our Lady of Guadalupe. So we can ask Our Lady of Aparecida and to help us in a way to make ourselves what we need to be. We need, many times we're called to do something which is difficult, which is not easy, and we fail, and we need to be like these fishermen. They prayed more. And then they found Our Lady, that encounter of Our Lady. And then from there, I got more fish than they know what to do with. Many things we pray many years for graces to receive. And all they're waiting for us to do is move a bit. Go in search of Our Lady. Our Lady will appear and she'll bring everything with us. So let's ask Our Lady of Aparecida, Our Lady of the Cape, to help us in our day-to-day lives. To help us in the way of truth, of goodness, of beauty. And particularly in the hardest moments of our lives, to be able to go and encounter Our Lady where she is, where she wants us to be. Like Our Lady of Arancani, she's there waiting for us. It's up to us asking the right questions, to be a good child, and to listen. So, it's one of those things. It's one of those things. We're going to look next week at Our Lady of Częstochowa, as I mentioned at the beginning, because it has a whole historic element to it also. Częstochowa is one of those things within the Polish community, which is near and dear, very much like these, very much like this apparition of Our Lady of Aparecida. But a foreign leader struck the image of Our Lady of Częstochowa, and I'll talk about that next time. But we're going to ask in a special way that Our Lady bless you all, and all your families. And we'll see you next week. May God bless you.
You have been listening to the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bunyan, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.